Okay. Thank you all for coming out on what is actually a very cold night. So, I appreciate it. I want to speak with you this evening. This is going to be the first shiur on the topic of mukta. Mukta is really a very difficult topic. My kids always talk about mukta. Everything is mukta. You can't turn on the light on Shabbos, it's mukta. You can't drive a car, it's mukta. You can't eat non-sugar cereal on Shabbos, it's mukta. They have all these different theories about what's considered mukta. And they also have like an insult that they call each other mukta head or mukta brain when they end up using mukta, which of course they do inevitably all the time. So I want to talk about mukta. Mukta is a very difficult topic. It appears in a few different prakim in Maseches Shabbos. The end of the third parak of Shabbos deals extensively with mukta, and then the Gemara picks up on topics of mukta towards the very end of the Masechta. I decided not to give many sources from the Gemara, just because there's so many Gemaras. Rather, we'll kind of first give an overview for what's the reason for the Isser Mukta, and then we'll move on to some of the specifics. The specifics of Mukta in terms of the categories of what is the different categories of Mukta, and that itself is subject to debate. The Tiferes Yisrael writes in Mishnayos that there are 50 different categories of Mukta, 5-0. The Beis Yosef gives 7 categories of mukta. There's probably no dispute. It's just a question of how you categorize things, whether we count 7, whether we count 50. There's probably no major machlokas over here. But the fact is there are different categories of mukta, and each category has its own rules. So let's begin with, why is it that Chazal forbid mukta? Mukta, first of all, is probably an Isser D'Rabbanan. It's probably rabbinic. There's a Rashi at the beginning of Beitza, where Rashi comments that mukta is in fact a D'Oraisa. No? Rashi at the beginning, yes.
Could you just give like a real brief definition of exactly what it is?
Oh, that's going to be really hard. Yeah, we'll get there, but that's going to be really hard. Right now we're speaking about mukta in general. So the basic definition of mukta means set aside, which means something that's not prepared for Shabbos. The Torah says by Shabbos, v'hechino eis asher yaviu, that you're supposed to prepare in the context of the mon, to prepare the mon before Shabbos. So anything that is not muchan, that is not prepared, the opposite of being muchan is being mukta. So that is mukta. That's the definition.
It's something, not set aside.
Something that is not prepared for Shabbos, consequently it is set aside. Now mukta of course comes in many different forms. There's mukta in the sense of something that just lacks positive designation, and then there's also mukta in the sense of something that is occasionally pushed away, negatively designated. Something that we say is absolutely not going to be used on Shabbos. And these are different categories of mukta. For example, on this list, I have 4 different categories that I give you. Category number 1 is interesting, keli shemlachto laheter, right? Which is a different type of mukta, an item, a heter item is mukta. Number 2 is the famous one, keli shemlachto laiser, that we know. Number 3 is mukta machmas kisron kis. Something that's mukta because literally it involves some loss of money. Category number 3, as we'll see later on, is something that just, it's not only that it lacks positive designation for Shabbos, rather it's something that is withheld from use. Something that we consciously made a decision not to use on Shabbos. That's category number 3. But I think I'm getting too far afield and I'm going to confuse you. So let's try to bring it back home to the beginning. What's the reason for mukta? So the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kufchav Gimon Kufchav Dala tells us that mukta was invented in the days of Nehemiah ben Chachilya. Right? In the days of Nehemiah, right, like Ezra and Nehemiah. So in the days of Nehemiah, so people were very lax in their observance of Shabbos. In particular, they carried often. Chazal decided that because they are not keeping Shabbos properly, they have to add additional stringencies. That is when mukta was invented. they invented the stringencies on Shabbos in the days of Nehemiah, because since people are being lax on Shabbos, they decided the best way to oppose that is adding additional Isurim. Right? So they said, listen, we're worried you guys are going to carry on Shabbos without an Eruv, so therefore you can't move items at home on Shabbos also, so that you shouldn't come to carry. Interestingly, by the way, this is one of my Rebbeim in high school pointed out when we did this for the first time. This is the huge mistake that the conservative movement makes, no? When you see that people are not keeping mitzvot properly, so instead of trying to look for leniencies, right, Chazal impose additional stringencies to try to get them to keep Shabbos better. That is one of the basic lessons of Muktzah that emerges from the Gemara. People were carrying, therefore Chazal said, don't move anything. Yeah, quickly. Yes, there is an Isser of Muktzah on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov also carrying is forbidden, if carrying is done completely Shelo L'Tzorech. Right? There is an Isser of Muktzah on Yom Tov as well. Not only is there an Isser of Muktzah on Yom Tov, the Gemara Beitza says that Isser of Muktzah on Yom Tov is more stringent than Isser of Muktzah on Shabbos, which would be a full other shiur, not for tonight. Okay? Now, so, the Gemara says that the Isser of Muktzah is because we might come to carry, and the Isser of Muktzah was instituted in the days of Nehemiah. There is a bit of a problem, that there is one Gemara that says that when David HaMelech died, so they needed to move him. No? Because David HaMelech died, he was outside, they were aware that the sun is going to beat down on him, it will begin to smell, it wouldn't be respectful. So there's a whole conversation about how can you move David HaMelech, there's an Isser of Muktzah. So he was outside in the chutzer, right? And the concern was, how can you move David HaMelech inside so that the sun doesn't beat down on him? So the Gemara there came up with the famous idea called Kikar El Tinok, no? That's what you do. If you have to move a corpse on Shabbos, you put a loaf of bread or something on the body, and through that you're able to move the body. The problem there is that David HaMelech was before Nehemiah. Yeah. No? So how can we tell you that the Isser of Muktzah was invented in the days of Nehemiah, when the Isser of Muktzah obviously existed in the times of David HaMelech? It's a great question. There is a whole literature to answer this question. Not for now. Okay? So, why is the Isser of Muktzah existent? Well, we know, because of carrying. Well, that's what the Ravid says, no? The Ravid, at the end of the second paragraph on these sheets, it says, Hasagas HaRavid. The Ravid is Reb Avron ben David of Paskiers. He died in the year 1197, right? The Ravid lived in Paskiers, which is in Provence. He got the Rambam in 1192, 5 years before he died, and he decided that he's just going to jot down a few notes on this new book called the Rambam, and because, what the heck, right? And then it turned out that the only thing the Ravid is remembered for is like jotting down a few notes on the side of the Rambam, when in fact the Ravid made some huge contributions beforehand in Judaism. He wrote a Perush on Shas, most of it is missing, but the Ravid was known as the greatest commentator on Shas. So the Ravid says that the prohibition of muktzah, if nedvam elo nago b'isra ha-tiltuv asu shalo yitalte al-kem atzach l'nikmoshit ba'er, Amr Avraham, od amru, atu tiltu lav tzarech ha-tza'ahi. The Ravid says it's a beferish gemara. The gemara says that the isra of muktzah is that we shouldn't come to carry. That's what the Ravid quotes, the isra of muktzah. However, the Rambam gave some other reasons for the Isser Muktzah. Let's begin from the top, from the Rambam. Asru chachomim letaltel, miksas devarim b'shabbos, kedershu osa b'chol. We're not allowed to carry things on Shabbos the same as we do during the weekday. Umipnei ma nagu b'isser zeh. How come you can't move things on Shabbos? How come there's a concept of Muktzah? Amru. Umam hiziru nivyim v'tzivu shalo yehei hiluchacha b'shabbos ki luchacha b'chol v'lo sichas ha-shabbos ki sichas ha-chol. Right? Remember, Yeshaya tells us that Shabbos is supposed to be different than every other day. No? We don't walk on Shabbos the same as we walk during the week. We don't talk on Shabbos the same as we talk during the week. The Yerushalmi famously says that you're not supposed to speak at all on Shabbos. No? V'koshi hitiru she'ela shalom on Shabbos. I have friends who are machmer in this all week long. It's a suffix of Shabbos, so they never talk. But that's probably not what it means. The idea is that Yeshaya says that Shabbos is supposed to be completely different. So therefore, Chazal said, right, Kal v'chomer shelo yehei tilto b'Shabbos kitoto b'chol. Certainly you shouldn't move things on Shabbos the same as you move things during the week. Ostensibly, Shabbos is supposed to be different from the rest of the week. Right? And moreover, then the Rambam continues, Shaharei hu batel v'yoshet b'beis v'yivakish tov shi yisasek bo v'nimtzer shelo shavas u'bito hatam shenema b'torah l'man yanuach. The Rambam says, listen, moreover, if we're going to allow you to move all your stuff on Shabbos and to move your pens and your papers and to just move things around the house, so it turns out that you're going to spend all day of Shabbos packing and moving, right? And then you're going to miss out on the reason that's given in the Torah called L'man Yanuach, that you should rest. Right? Muktza is, for the Rambam, a way to maintain the rest of Shabbos. And Muktza is, for the Rambam, a way to make sure that Shabbos is different than every other day. And in the next halacha, the Rambam speaks it out even more clearly. The Rambam says, listen, and I think we should all be sympathetic to this Rambam now, there are certain people who are out of work, no? And people who are out of work, so how is their Shabbos different than their weekdays? Right? If I work, Shabbos is different. If I don't work, how is Shabbos different? And the Rambam says we need what he calls a shvisa hanikeres. It has to be a recognizable element of resting. So consequently, they said there is an iser muktzah. So what emerges from this Rambam is a few things. The Rambam basically has three different reasons for the iser muktzah, and all three reasons are not found in the Gemara. The Gemara has one reason, that you shouldn't carry on Shabbos. Right? And in days in the Chemia, they instituted muktzah, that you shouldn't carry. But the Rambam says, I have three other reasons, which are not found in the Gemara. I have one reason because we don't want you to move things on Shabbos the same as you move things during the week. I have a second reason, says the Rambam, that we want you to rest on Shabbos to maintain the reason of L'man Yanuach. Then the Rambam says I have a third reason for the Iser Muktzah. The third reason is that if someone is unemployed, someone doesn't work all week, so how is Shabbos going to be different? Obviously, it has to be Shvisa Nikeres, therefore there's an Iser of Muktzah. Now, why the Rambam left the reasons of the Gemara out are interesting. And maybe we'll comment on it a little bit later. But apparently, the Gemara's reason is just ignored by the Rambam. The Gemara says that Muktzah is interesting based on the Chemia. Usually the Rambam also tells us history. Here the Rambam doesn't tell us that history. He's ignoring that entire Gemara. And it's very, very strange. Maybe in 5 minutes we'll comment. I have a theory about why the Rambam changed from the Gemara, but let's leave it for now. So the basic reason why the Rambam gives is very different than the Gemara. The Gemara says muktzah is based on carrying. Now, halachically, there's a lot of literature, a lot of kulas in muktzah based on the fact that it's somewhat resemblant to carrying. No? The Achronim say, for example, that moving muktzah in atypical sort of ways of moving stuff is going to be permitted, no? I'm allowed to move muktzah with my foot, right? Why am I allowed to move muktzah with my foot? Because if I'd carry with my foot, I wouldn't be chayiv. I wouldn't be obligated for carrying on Shabbos. So therefore, moving muktzah with my foot also is not going to be a problem.
It's still
It's heter gomer we pass in.
I mean, by Hotsa'ah.
By Hotsa'ah, since it's only an Isser Derabbanan, by Hotsa'ah, therefore they never instituted it in the context of Muktzah. Only things that are Usser on the level of Doraisa by Hotsa'ah apply to Muktzah. Right? Now, according to the Rambam, all bets are off, because the Rambam never quotes this reason of Muktzah being based on carrying. It's something that's definitely worth thinking about. Yes?
But I think that still you can make that other thing different, a different kind of moving, makes it a recognizable difference.
Right. So, right. You're saying that's recognizable because all week long I carry my pen in my hand, and on Shabbos I carry my pen with my foot.
You need a shvisa nikeret. This is a hecker.
Okay, it could be. But it's certainly, it's not as built into the fundamental definition of muktzah as it is according to the Ravid. I'll say it like that. Right? Perhaps we could suggest why it should be permitted even for the Rambam, but each one of the kulas in muktzah we have to analyze based on the reasons of muktzah. Fine. Now, the first category of muktzah, again, we mentioned that the Beis Yosef has seven categories of muktzah, the Pharisee Yisrael has 50. We will only talk about four tonight, and I hope we'll get to all four. The first category of muktzah I want to talk about is the one that's the least obvious. Keli shemalachto laheter. What does that mean? Something that I could use for permitted purposes. My salt shaker, no? Is a salt shaker muktzah?
Probably not.
Probably not, no? Of course not, right? What do you do with the salt shaker? A salt shaker, you shake salt, right? That's permitted. Yet, Shulchan Aruch says that a keli shemalachto laheter, right, is the first category of muktzah. Here, let's read it. Keli shemalachto laheter, mutzah latalta afilo enu, elo letzorech hakli, shema yishaber yiganev. In other words, I'm allowed to move my salt shaker on Shabbos to prevent it from being stolen. Aval, shelo letzorech klal, osur latalta. But I cannot move my salt shaker for absolutely no reason. A keli shemalachto laheter, you're not allowed to move for no reason. Now, it happens that Shulchan Aruch says that there are certain exceptions to the rules of Kalish HaMachto Laheter. Kisvei HaKodesh, Svarim, right, are exempt from the rules. The Pashtus is that a Megillah is never going to be Muktzah. There's a whole literature. The Pri Chodesh wanted to say that when Purim falls out on the Shabbos and you don't need a Megillah then, so then the Megillah is Muktzah that Shabbos. The simple reading of Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah points this out, both here and in Hilchos Megillah, is that the Megillah is always Mutter. Kisvei HaKodesh are never Muktzah. A mezuzah, no? This happens sometimes. A mezuzah falls off the wall, no? Is it muktzah? Absolutely not. Kisvei HaKodesh cannot be muktzah, right? It is exempt from even this lowest category of muktzah, the category of Kelei Shemlato Laheter. Tefillin is a machlokes in the poskim, whether tefillin is considered a Kelei Shemlato Laheter or Kelei Shemlato Laheter. It says right over here in Shulchan Aruch, the Rama writes, Hagot tefillin, ein letaltalam ki im letzorech. In other words, that tefillin, according to the Mechaber, considered keli shemalachto laheter. The Mishnah Brura quotes poskim who assume that tefillin are considered a keli shemalachto leiser. The question is whether tefillin should really be a muktzah machmas besaron kis today, because our tefillin are pretty expensive. Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach has an essay in the Shmir Shabbos where he assumes that tefillin can't be muktzah machmas besaron kis for a technical reason. Maybe we'll talk about it when we get to muktzah machmas besaron kis. Fine, we should get so far. Yeah.
What counts as no tzorach?
So what counts as no tzorach? So this is the million-dollar question. I can't move something for no purpose whatsoever. So whenever I move something, there is a purpose, right? I'm allowed to move it to protect it. I'm allowed to move it because I need it. I'm allowed to move it because I need the place where it is. So what's considered moving it for no purpose? So the pashtus is, it means just like, any of you have nervous tics? I mean, please don't raise your hands. Like, I do this all the time, no? You just like move pens around, or you just like twist stuff, or you just like move stuff, no?
Isn't having something to fidget with a purpose?
Fidgeting. So the question is fidgeting considered a purpose? So the Aruch HaShulchan over here has a comment about when we say that a keli shemalachto laheter, I can't move for no purpose whatsoever, right? The only thing I can move for no purpose is kisvei HaKodesh and ochlen, is svarim and food. Food also is completely exempt from muktzah. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, we'll pick up in the second line, ve'eino muvan, I don't understand it. Ha'kevan shemetaltalan, vada yishlo zekavona bazar, right? That's your question. If you're moving it, of course you have a purpose. Ve'tzarech lomar, kigon de'eino elo misasek ba'alma ve'eino shum kavona betul tulo. The case is that's misasek. Then you're not just paying attention, you're not paying attention, you just pick it up. So this makes no sense also, because if it's misasek, if I have no intention whatsoever, so that's an exemption always. Right? Let's say I wake up in the morning and I just like turn on the light on Shabbos morning, no? That ever happens to you? It's happened to me many times. Right? You don't know where you are, no? Is that shogi? Is that misasek? It could be it's misasek. Or sometimes, oh, you're walking outside and there's a bug underneath your foot and you just kill the bug as you're walking. That's misasek. You have no intention whatsoever. Right? So that's not a maisa aveira at all. So why would this be a problem? Very difficult to understand this Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan himself writes, "Im yeshlo tanug b'mishem etaltelo nihidim mlato le'iser." It's not considered a tzorech, but mlato le'heter it is considered a tzorech. In other words, if I enjoy just playing with it, I have some enjoyment. Sometimes people like executive toys or whatever. You just enjoy playing with it. So that's going to be permitted according to the Aruch HaShulchan. Very hard to understand. I saw many of the later Svarim assume that no, these cases of fidgeting is precisely what's Asar. Right? You really shouldn't fidget. The reason why they're Mako is because many Hasidish Rebbes, that's what the Milchas Shabbos writes, that there are many Hasidish Rebbes who used to play with the Pishkol HaTabak. Right? The Pishkol HaTabak is, most people here probably don't know, but a Pishkol HaTabak is Shmek Tabak.
Snuff.
Snuff, right? The snuff box. So people would play with their snuff box. Apparently this was a great tradition among the Hasidic Rebbes.
Can you use snuff on Shabbos?
Sure.
You can't smoke, but you can use snuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Right?
Note to self.
Fine. Now, so Kelei Shamatul HaHeter is type 1 of Mukta. The question is how many things are completely excluded from Kelei Shamatul HaHeter. There's a whole discussion over here. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah Sivkot and Chaf Gimel, we'll try to go quickly because there's a lot we want to do tonight. The Mishnah Berurah Sivkot and Chaf Gimel has a discussion about whether you're allowed to move cups and forks and knives. Stuff that's on the table. Now the reason for that discussion is in the Gemara, when it says that in the days of Nehemiah, they institute the Isser Mukta. First of all, they originally said that everything is Asar. Then Hitiru v'chazur v'hitiru. Then they said, this is Mutter, and this is Mutter, and this is Mutter. As Jews began keeping Shabbos better and better. Now, even when everything was Asar, they couldn't say everything is Asar. They said that, you know, the big spoon and the little spoon and the knife is permitted. Actually, I think it's a big knife, little knife, and spoon. That's what was permitted. Forks did not yet exist, right? That's what Chaim Soloveitchik always used to point out when we learned about Mayim Acharonim. Forks didn't exist until the medieval period, right? In the time of the Gemara, no one had a fork. Fine, whatever that's worth. But... Huh?
Oh,
touching the food. So the point is that the Gemara says that the cups and the big knife and the little knife and the plate are completely excluded from Mukta, even in the days of Nehemiah, when everything was ushered, these things were permitted. That's what the Gemara says. The Rambam, for some reason, leaves this out. Why does the Rambam leave this out? It's a big mystery, but it seems to me that this is connected to what we began with. That same Gemara that says that everything was also in the days of Nehemiah says everything was also because people used to carry. Right? The Rambam never quotes carrying as the reason for Mukta. The Rambam quotes Shvisa Hanikeres, Leman Yanuach, right? Yeshaya. The Rambam quotes other reasons. So therefore, it would seem that the Rambam, again, we still don't know the complete answer, but the Rambam is just completely ignoring that Gemara. Fine. So that's Muktza type 1, the type of Kelei Shemalachto Laheter. A good example of a Kelei Shemalachto Laheter, by the way, is a wristwatch. It's probably a Kelei Shemalachto Laheter. You probably shouldn't move your wristwatch for no reason, but I don't think you ever move a wristwatch for no reason. But any Kelei Shemalachto Laheter, you can't move for no reason. If it's a broken wristwatch, that's probably a Kelei Shemalachto Laheter.
Once the wristwatch doesn't tell time anymore,
so unless it's a very fancy watch that looks nice, which might be a tachshit, sometimes people would wear a gold watch even if it doesn't tell time, correct? Mm. So that type of gold watch...
It says in the Muktzah book, the nicer the watch, the worse it is for...
Yeah, so that's because they're nervous about... There's a type of Isra tachshit in the Gemara that maybe you'll take off and show to your friend. We assume today... I know that women sometimes, or when they get engaged, might like take off their ring and show it to their friends. It's like a thing, no? That you take off your ring and you show it to your friends. So that's the concern in the Gemara. That if I have a tachshit, I have an ornament, I'm not supposed to wear it on Shabbos when there's no Eruv, because maybe I'll show it to my friend and I'll come to carry. I think that applies to rings. No one ever takes off their watch to really show their friends. I don't think it's standard. So whatever the Isser of Tachshit is, wouldn't apply. Even if the Isser of Tachshit does apply, right, the secret is, then Shulchan Aruch says that most women, or men generally in the time of the Gemara, didn't wear jewelry. Today it's already a different world, that men do wear some jewelry, but in the time of the Gemara, men didn't wear jewelry at all. The Rishonim say that we shouldn't criticize people who wear jewelry on Shabbos, even though technically when there's no Erev, you shouldn't wear jewelry, because maybe you'll show it to people. But about this, we say we don't criticize people. This is the classic application, Mutav Shehu Shog again in Shulchan Aruch. This is, so ultimately that whole issue of Tachshit we kind of ignore on a practical level. Yeah.
In my lifetime, a while ago, I recall a very, very frum Boyer person stopping my husband in the park on Shabbos, asking him what time it was. Because he didn't wear, this gentleman did not wear a watch.
Right, so there is a discussion. Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that you're allowed to wear a watch on Shabbos outside of an Erev, because he assumes that a watch is considered like a beged, that it's part of the clothing that a person has. There's a whole literature about whether a watch should really be a beged, because usually garments are here to cover me, to protect me, right? A watch doesn't protect me, it doesn't cover me in any way. So there's a whole literature about this. But that's what Rav Moshe assumed. Rav Nosson Gishtetner, who just passed away like 2 weeks ago, wrote a long tshuva attacking Rav Moshe on the heter to wear watches on Shabbos outside of an Erev. Whatever it's
worth. Person must have followed that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was always... I mean, Rav Moshe kind of wrote a very tepid heter. He wasn't excited about the heter to wear watches on Shabbos. Okay, let's talk about real types of muktzah. Keli shamlachto le'isser. Right, that is a utensil whose primary intention is to do prohibitions on Shabbos. Hammers, no? That's the classical example in all the books. What do you do with a hammer? I wouldn't know. I have no idea what you do with a hammer. But people who... Mach and Patish. What we do with a hammer is that it's Malach Tola Isser because you hit your finger and you end up like with a black and blue mark. That's why it's Malach Tola Isser. But a hammer is the classic case of a Keli Shemalach Tola Isser. A screwdriver is a Keli Shemalach Tola Isser. These are things that are intended to do Isurim on Shabbos. So what's the halach of keli shemlato le'iser? So the Gemara has a machlokas Abaye and Rava about this. We paskin that a keli shemlato le'iser will pick up from the bottom of the page. Mutar le'taltelo, you're allowed to move it. Right? Fine. Let's skip that line. Mutar le'taltelo. Bein le'tzarech gufo. If I need the item itself, that's on the second line, if I need the item itself, kigon, for example, kurnes shel zahavim, lo shel nafachim, liftzoa bo ego zimmer. This is a classic case. I use my hammer to chop open nuts.
This is also how we know we're allowed to crack nuts on
Shabbos,
right?
Well, we know you're allowed to crack nuts on Shabbos and elsewhere, but I can take my hammer to crack open a nut, and I can also move my hammer, bein letzorech makomo, I can move my hammer if I need the place where the hammer is. So this is the classic halach of a keli shemlachto le'iser. I'm allowed to move it l'tzorech gufo if I need the item itself. Why do I need it to crack open nuts or to do some other mutter activity? Or if I need the hammer l'tzorech mekomo. Okay. The Mishnah Berurah has a chumrah. Mishnah Berurah says, let me see if I printed this up. I didn't print up all of the Mishnah Berurahs here. The Mishnah Berurah has a chumrah. He says that you can't use a keli shemalachto leheter, a keli shemalachto leiser, letzorech gufo, if you have a keli shemalachto leheter around. For example, if I have a nutcracker, I should not use my hammer to crack open the nut. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. This is debatable. The Ketzos HaShulchan, Reb Avram Chaim Noah, disagrees. And the Pashtus in the Gemara is against the Mishnah Berurah also. There's a sefer that the Punovich Kolal came out with on Shabbos. So Rav Steinman's son wrote an essay why he feels the Mishnah Berurah is not correct about this. Even if the Mishnah Berurah is correct, Rav Moshe Feinstein has in one of his tshuvas that the only time the Mishnah Berurah meant I shouldn't use my hammer to crack open a nut if I have a nutcracker is if I have a nutcracker right here in this room. But if I have a nutcracker in the next room, so I'm allowed to use my hammer because I'm saving the tircha, I'm saving the bother of having to go to the next room to get my hammer. Okay. That's the heter of tzorech gufo. What about tzorech makomo? Tzorech makomo, the classic case is, let's say the hammer is on my chair, I want to sit down on the chair. No? Okay, question. What about if the hammer is on my chair, I want to sit down on the chair, but I have another chair to sit in? Am I allowed to kind of fake it? Right? So yes, The Mishnah Berurah paskins that you're allowed to fake it. You're allowed to do a ha'arama in this case. And say, you know what? I mean, this is like, I remember Archie Bunker had his favorite chair, no? If he wouldn't, so if that's your chair, that you have to sit there, even though there are other places you could sit, no, you could be meko and move the hammer. That's considered sorech makomo. What else is sorech makomo? Let's say I have a hammer on the shelf, and I want to get my sefer behind the shelf. I can move the hammer away to get the sefer. By the way, no one says, the Chazon Ish points out, no one says in this situation that you should move the hammer with a shinoi. Right? Once you're allowed to move the hammer, you move it. And the Magid Mishnah writes, once I'm allowed to move the hammer, Letzorech Makomo, is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, I could take the hammer and put it wherever I want. Huh. Right? I could then put the hammer back in the hammer drawer, where it belongs. So that's halacha of Tzorech Makomo. The big issue that comes up in Tzorech Makomo, which is not really discussed extensively in Poskim, is my mother's favorite case. Now, let's say me or somebody else forgot to put the hammer away before Shabbos, and the hammer is on the dining room table, and then guests are coming over, and you don't really need that part of the dining room table because it's on the edge of the table, but you know, it's an eyesore. To have a hammer on the Shabbos table, my mother would kill me, you know? And she probably did many times at this.
Right?
It says Pekuach Nefesh, right? That. But is that considered Tzorech Makomo? You don't need to use the place where the hammer is. Right? If someone would be sitting in that area of the table, of course you're allowed to move the hammer. And if you need to move the hammer to get to something over here, it's not really that you need the place, but you just don't want the hammer where it is. So is this permitted? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the Shmirah Shabbos does not... Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not convinced that this is mutter. In the English language muktzah book, there are two English language muktzah books. There's the English language muktzah book by Rabbi Badner of Lakewood that came out in 1981. Then there's an English language muktzah book of Rabbi Cohen, also from Lakewood, that came out like in around the year 2000. So in the Rabbi Cohen muktzah book, he quotes that he thinks there's room to be makel on this question. To move the hammer if it just annoys you where it is. It happens that there's another svara why this would be mutter possibly. There's a din in muktzah called graf shorei, no? Graf shorei is something that has a bad odor. So I'm allowed to take something with a bad odor out on Shabbos. Even though technically it's muktzah, I'm allowed to move it out. The Taz writes that this doesn't only apply to something with a bad odor, but let's say there are shells of nuts on my table, no? And it's an eyesore. So the Taz says, in that situation, there's a heter of graf sharei to move these shells. It could be that the hammer is the same type of thing, no? Again, from... You have to know my mother. But from that perspective, I could hear that it would also be a type of eyesore, and maybe there's a heter. Yeah.
Because the best
answer
would be to decide you
want to
eat some nuts.
So the best answer, right, definitely. What I could do is say I want a nut, pick up the hammer and crack it. Absolutely, that would be permitted. Yeah, you had a comment?
Yeah, what about usually like the flowers on the table?
Flowers.
You know, once you start eating, you want to be able to see everybody so you can move it.
So the flowers on the table are probably not muktzah at all. If it's a plant, a growing plant is muktzah. But just plain cut flowers are probably not muktzah. So the only time it might possibly be muktzah is if the flowers haven't completely bloomed yet, and by moving the water, there's a concern that you might get them to bloom quicker. But most cut flowers that you buy, I think this is not relevant for it. Most cut flowers are not muktzah at all. Fine. The Aruch HaShulchan has the following chumrah, which isn't only the Aruch HaShulchan. Half of the Rishonim held this way, which is like this. When we talk about Kehli Shem Latol Eser, we have this Aruch HaShulchan on the top of the second side of the page, if you want to follow. The Aruch HaShulchan says that the definition of a Kehli Shem Latol Eser is like a hammer, which is something that I could use for, that's primarily meant for Eser, also has a heter purpose. I could use it to crack open nuts. But let's say I have something that only has an Eser purpose. There's no heter purpose whatsoever. And he gives an example. You know what his example is? Da, the besimin ze, v'chein l'kamam, dine muktzah, etc. Right? So, we speak about the leichter. And then he writes,
Ava b'ner shalanu, the fourth line, the third line before the end of this Aruch HaShulchan. Our candles, shekorin leichter, o pamutot shalanu, shekorin lampin, hema ba'atma muktzim, mitam she'enam ru'uyim l'shum tashmish, rak lahadlik bo, v'heve malachto le'iser, she'eno ro'i l'mleches heter klal, v'hi muktza gemura, av kishelo hedliko b'klal, etc. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, that if I have something like leichter that is intended to use for an iser, and there's no heter purpose that it's really used for, what can you do with leichter?
Can you get light in the room?
Huh? What can you do with leichter? So the Aruch HaShulchan says, therefore, it's considered entirely malacha le'iser, and it's forbidden l'tzorach gufo and l'tzorach makomo. So if I have leichter, and I'm talking about leichter that weren't lit at the beginning of Shabbos. If the leichter were lit at the beginning of Shabbos, it's a much more chomer type of muktzah that we'll have to talk about probably next week. But the leichter were not lit at the beginning of Shabbos. A regular candlestick, says Aruch HaShulchan, is still considered high-level muktzah, and you can't move it even if you need the place. Now, there are two ways to disagree with this Aruch HaShulchan. One is by pointing out that's a machlokas harishonim, and maybe we pass on like the other rishonim. Okay, that's very involved. That would be like a full shiur. The other way to disagree is with Moshe Feinstein, writes in Linifus Trufus, he says, what item is it that has no heter purpose? Today we have something called a paperweight, no? Well, right? Like 3 pieces of paper, yes. Right, so a rock is the last category that we'll talk about. That's muksa machmas gufo. It's something that is not considered a keli. It's not a utensil at all. So if I designate it before Shabbos, I'm making it into a utensil. This is worse than a rock, because this is something that is a utensil, but it's a utensil that only has iser properties. So therefore, the Aruch HaShulchan says you cannot move it at all. In the English muksa book, they point out that a pen would be a Kaili shekol malachto le'iser also. No? Because what can you do with a pen? Again, it could also be a paperweight. I don't...
Scratch.
You can scratch your head. You can... Right. I mean, there are many parts of your body you can scratch with a pen. Like you have... Right? I mean, yeah, of course. It's very hard to hear this. It's an interesting svar that Aruch HaShulchan has, but practically speaking... practically speaking, it's very difficult. But the basic idea that we have is that a keli shamlato la'isr, my hammer, I cannot move to protect the hammer. I can only move it if I need the hammer. So what do I do if my hammer is outside, or my keli shamlato la'isr is outside, and I want to protect it, I'm worried it's going to be stolen. So what can I do to make sure it won't be stolen? So one thing I can do is I can fake it, no? Say, oh yeah, I really need to eat nuts, and I pick it up to go and crack a nut. Fine. That's one thing I could do. The other thing that I could do is there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch that maybe Kikaro Tinok helps by a keli shamlato la'iser. This idea that we had by David HaMelech when he died, that you put a loaf of bread on it, so there's a Tshuvas HaRosh that maybe this helps by a keli shamlato la'iser. Also, this is largely rejected in the poskim. It's probably not something that would work. But what we do have that would work is there's one line in the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat and Tesavav, towards the end. The Mishnah Berurah says, Al Yedei Eino Yehudi Yeshlomar Deshari B'chozeh. The Mishnah Berurah says, you can do Amir al Nachri to move Mukta. A guy can move Mukta for you. So if I have my hammer outside, right, assuming there's an Erev, if there's no Erev, it's a more complicated shiloh. He can ask the guy to move it for you, because then he asks the guy to carry for you. But if it's just an Isser of Mukta, you could ask the guy to move the hammer for you, and that will not be a problem. Fine. So this is the basic, these are some of the basic ideas of Keli Shemalachto Le'iser. Let's move on to Muksa category number 3, Muksa Machmas Chesaron Kis. The Gemara says that Muksa Machmas Chesaron Kis are... basically here, Shulchan Aruch quotes, and this is straight from the Gemara and Daf Kuf Chavdal on the base, Kol HaKim Nitzolim B'Shabbos Chutz M'Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis Kigon Sakin Shal Shchita O Shal Mila V'Zem O Shal Saparim. Basically, a barber's knife, a Shchita knife, and a Mila knife, Now, why are these things considered mukta machlas kesaron kes? Not that these things are so expensive. No, a scalpel is mukta machlas kesaron kes. The scalpels that you could buy today cost around $2. They come in a little thing of plastic. You rip it open, and it's a scalpel. Why is it mukta machlas kesaron kes? The idea is that any nick in it would get it ruined, and therefore your makbid, the Gemara has a lashon that's a keli shemakbid olav miyachid laduchta. Something that you're very careful about. You won't use it for any other purpose besides its intended purpose. I'm not going to use my shchitan. I have a shchitan knife at home, by the way. But if you come over for Shabbos, I can't show it to you. Because it's mutzah machas besarim kiss. Because my shchitan knife, right, I'm very nervous to use it because it might get a nick. How is it my shchitan knife has a nick? That's the real challenge I give to the smicha guys, to find the nick in my shchitan knife.
Since it already has a nick, can you now move it on Shabbos?
No. Because it says in Shulchan Aruch that I'm allowed to shecht with a knife with a nick on it if I, right, korich olav, right, I take a towel and I wrap it on it, no? And I shecht shelo keneged hapagima, no? Okay, whatever. So there is a literature about this in the poskim. The simple answer is no. But there's a different type of muksa machmas chesaron kis, which are items that are completely withheld from use, not because you're worried about nicking them, but because either it's like merchandise, something that you intend to sell. That's a separate category within muksa machmas chesaron kis that applies to kalim shemachto laheter as well. That's here in Shulchan Aruch Simin Shin Yud Sifeis. That category we assume does not apply to food, but kalim dvarim ha'omdim l'sfora is also muksa machmas chesaron kis. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says the following idea, which I think is very true. Often people buy things. I have to reveal a secret. My wife does this all the time. She buys stuff from various places online, and she decides that she doesn't really like it, then she's going to send it back. No? I think this is not the most uncommon thing in the planet. People do this, right? So the problem is that if it's something that you're going to send back, so you're very makbid on that thing, that you don't want it to get damaged in any way, so then it becomes muksa machmas besaron kis. And that item cannot be moved, right, letzarach gufo or letzarach makomo. You can't move it just because you need the place where the item is. You can't move it if you need the item. There's a chumra of the prima godim, which is unclear if we accept or not. The prima godim says like this: biggest chumra in the law of hilchos mukta. Prima godim writes that muksa machmas besaron kis. You can't even move toto kel achar yad or toto begufo. Usually mukta, even higher levels mukta. A rock, I'm allowed to kick all day, no? I can take my rock and just kick it. I can move my rock with my elbow. Muksa machmas besaron kis, says the prima godim, I can't move with my elbow. It's unclear if we paskin like this prima godim or not. I once had a shiloh like this. I remember I got in a fight with, I was at my in-laws for a Shabbos. That was on Sukkot. So somebody comes over to the Rav Friday night to ask him to shiloh that he left his lulav and esrog on the on the sukkah table. And what should he do with his lulav and esrog? Now it's on the sukkah table, Shabbos of Sukkot. Okay? So that's the story.
And he needs the table.
He needs a table to eat. So what's the story? How muktzah is a lulav and esrog on the Shabbos Chol Hamoed Sukkot?
Yes. So
if it's like muktzah, if it's like an even, if it's like muktzah machmas gufo, I can move it begufo, right? I could kick it using my elbow. I could move it away, right? Or Moshe writes, by the way, that moving stuff in your elbows is perfectly permitted under all circumstances. So it could be complicated, but you could get off the table. But if I'm worried that it's muksa machmas besaron kis, because my esrog is, so then you can't move it at all. So I remember getting in a disagreement with this rabbi. He had no idea who I was. I'm like this young kolo guy. Like, who is he? And the rabbi says that he felt that we hold that you can't move it at all. So I told him, I don't think we hold like this prima godim. So he says, why not? So I'm Chacham Avad Yosef has a chuv against the prima godim. So he says, he's a Sfaradi. Yeah, that's not the way halacha works. That's when I got upset.
Oh, yes.
Right, that's when I got upset. I'm like, come on, you can't. You know, we don't work like that. Right? That's not the way Judaism works. So Lamaisa, I do think that there are many poskim who disagree with the prima godim, especially in a case like this, that it's not so pasha that's considered muksa machmas besaron kis, because an esrog is technically ochlam, no? And food right. can't really become muksa machmas chasan kis at all. And the lulav is eitzim v'avonim. Right? So I felt that really should be muksa machmas gufo, or it should be a kesh amlato laheter technically, like the tefillin. So I felt it should be permitted. They sent the shot to Reb Fivel Cohen after Shabbos. I forgot what he said, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The esrog anyway is roy for smelling.
Esrog is right. So an esrog shel mitzvah, you're not allowed to smell. The shaila is this considered that I'm not allowed to smell on the Shabbos of Chol HaMoed Sukkos? Right, that's also a further question. Okay.
You're not supposed to smell it.
Yeah.
This kind of makes a lot of sense though, because if the concern is that you're afraid you're going to damage it, then if you're moving it kalachar yad, you're even more likely to damage it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, technically, muksa machmas chasarin kis is because I'm afraid to damage it, if I'm kovei amakom. But if the lumdus of total kalach hayad is it's not considered like I'm moving it at all. It's like it moves me'elav. It moves on its own. So then there's like blowing muksa, right? The Rama writes that you're allowed to blow muksa all day. No? I do this all the time. There are feathers. You just blow. That's the case in the Rama. You're allowed to blow muksa. You can't move muksa with your hands. Fine. So that is the discussion of muksa machmas chasaron kis.
What about the Picasso painting?
A Picasso painting? Yeah, so that's a question. Is that muksa machmas chasaron kis or not? If the definition of muksa machmas chasaron kis, that has to be a kelish amlato la'isser to begin with, Picasso painting isn't. The Chazal Nish is quoted as saying that anything that you really miyachid lo duchta, even if it's not kapit Allah, but if it's something that you always have in a special place, that's really considered muktzah. The Mishnah Berurah Pashtus disagrees with that Chazal Nish. I felt that it's permitted. Like, it's a machlokas Mishnah Berurah and Chazal Nish on the level of Drabban, I felt there's room to be make on this Shaila. Yeah. Even if it's not Picasso painting, even if it's a cheap painting that you have hanging up at home, it's the same Shaila.
Why a Picasso painting?
Same thing. Same. Well, no. The last category that we should talk about is muksa machmas gufo. Muksa machmas gufo is very hard to define. Items that are inherently muksa. The way Shulchan Aruch says it, here we'll just pick up from the Ramon. The bottom line, kol davar she'enu kli klal is vasar l'tatal afilu tzarech gufo. Kol shekin tzarech mekomo, something that's not a keli at all. That means that muksa machmas gufo, it's almost l'havdol, like the definition of the God. It's what it isn't. No? Muksa machmas gufo is not food, is not a sefer, is not a keli. So that is muksa machmas gufo. Dirt is muksa machmas gufo, because it's not a keli. It's not food. It's not a sefer. Therefore, it's automatically this new category. The interesting thing that's going to say muksa machmas gufo, which might be a philosophical statement, is there's a discussion in the Tshuva Sarashba about money. No? What is money? Is money a keli? So the Gemara in Bava Metzia has a discussion about whether I can use money as a keli for a kinyan sudar, no? When I want to exchange items, like you sell chametz to a rabbi, so you pick up a handkerchief, right? So the shaila is whether mosa niknas b'chalipin or not. Whether I could use the money as the sudar, as a handkerchief. So there you need a keli, right? That's the pasuk in Rus. Right, that you need a keli for a chalipin. So the question is whether money is a keli. So even though there's one opinion in the Gemara that money is a keli there, when it comes to hilchos muktza, we assume that money is not a keli. So that's really very interesting, though, philosophically. That money is something that's not food, okay, that I got. And money is not a sefer, okay, that I got. But money is not an instrument to get anything else. Money is inherently an item that is considered like dirt, and like stones, which is inherently useless in the philosophy of money. Whatever that's worth, there's probably something to it. So, muksa machmas gufo, you cannot move tzarech gufo and tzarech makomo. You can't move because you need the place. You can't move because you need the item. You can move muksa machmas gufo with your body. That's something, I guess, that we'll discuss next week.
So what is money considered in the morning
passage? Muksa machmas gufo. The Rashba entertains that maybe it's considered a keli shamachol iser, but we assume no. It's really muktzah machmas gufo. It's inherently muktzah.
It has buying power, but the material itself is useless.
It could be. I mean, yeah.
Could Could it be that, going back to the very beginning, that some categories of muksa were observed during the times of Dovin HaMelech, and then during the time of other categories?
So that's probably the answer. That in the times of Dovin HaMelech, muksa machmas gufo existed. A mace, a dead body, is muksa machmas gufo, no? It's not food, it's not a sefer, and it's not a utensil. So it's muksa machmas gufo. So that category probably existed earlier than Nehemiah. And the other categories of Muktza came after Nehemiah. That's what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that's what the Alter Rebbe writes in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, very good. Okay. Any other questions? Or thank you very much for coming.
What categories would...